Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, New Disaster Declaration Sets Customer Limits. Peyton mandates that stores may allow inside the number of people equal to 10% of capacity, by Stuart Doreen. Mayor Patrick Peyton has changed the current disaster declaration that puts in place measures that mandate social distancing during the coronavirus pandemic. The declaration states businesses can allow in the store the number of customers equal to 10% of its occupancy based on square footage. For example, if a store such as HEB has an occupancy of 2,000, then it would be allowed to have 200 customers at any one time. Employees would not factor in that number, Peyton said at Tuesday's special city council meeting. The declaration also states that those who have tested positive for coronavirus, COVID-19, are required to remain in their place of residency if they aren't recovering at a medical facility. City and medical officials talked at length about the next step. Doctors providing counsel included pulmonologist Dr. P.K. Patel and Dr. Summer Merritt, who has been vocal about what the community should do and is a leader of Protect Our Frontline, a concerned group of physicians and medical personnel. Both talked about wanting to see city leadership erring on the side of being too safe. I'm scared for my patients and scared for my community, Merritt said during the meeting. City Council members brought forth their ideas, including District 3 Representative Jack Ladd Jr., who called for closing certain non-essential businesses such as salons and tattoo parlors where social distancing between employees and customers is basically impossible. City Attorney John Onemiller said that if the Midland City Council wanted to put together an ordinance that is different than the mayor's declaration, it could do so at the council's next regularly scheduled meeting, which is April 14th. While the idea of restricting the number of customers has been talked about and put into play by some businesses, including grocery stores in the community, the first council member to talk about limiting it based on occupancy was Lori Blong, the representative of District 4. Blong called for a limit of 20% of the building's capacity. Every job that feeds a family is essential, Blong said, for her support of occupancy restriction. Peyton said during the meeting that restrictions based on occupancy make sense because it could allow stores such as HEB and Walmart to make decisions that promote a healthier community during pandemic times. It was stated during the meeting that arbitrary numbers such as 50 or 100 of people in a store can be counterproductive if there are many people standing in line waiting to get in and their social distancing is worse than those inside the store. Also, the restrictions based on occupancy provide clear guidelines for businesses, something operators asked about this weekend, Peyton said. The mayor also said his declaration treats large and small businesses equally and fairly. The council also stressed that employees are not part of the occupancy count, should that be an issue during enforcement. District 1 Councilman Scott Dufford said during the meeting that he thought the previous declaration was working, but wasn't against the direction of the mayor's declaration. At-large Councilman Spencer Robnett said he believes allowing more people in stores will expose more people to the virus, not less, and that personal responsibility was working. His motion to take no action failed, and leaving the previous declaration in place died for lack of a second. This article is entitled, Small Businesses Adapt to Restrictions. Midlanders Continue Support During Coronavirus, by J.C. Lewis. The front window of Found Furnishings has been the hashtag ShopSmallMidland in small lettering. The hashtag was started a couple of years ago, and it's continuing to connect customers on social media with Midland small businesses during the novel coronavirus pandemic. Found Furnishings is one of several local businesses that have had to adapt during the crisis. "We were a little ahead of all the regulations," said Kristen Covington, one of the owners, three owners. "We were lucky because we had just closed for spring break before the news all started getting really crazy here. We had a nice clean space to work in, and we had been able to keep going that way without customers in that orbit." Covington said they have been working since the fall on launching an online store. She said it has taken a while because they decided to switch to a different platform for their online store, and they changed their whole point of sale system to the same online platform. "Now that we're finalizing it, the company we're working with has told us they've been slammed with requests from other businesses trying to get online now because it's really the only way to stay afloat for a lot of people," she said. Found Furnishings is using Shopify to move their store online, but they have to use a point-of-sale system that allows for consignments, she said. "A shop that doesn't have consigners would probably be able to go straight to Shopify for a more simplified online store," Covington said. "We just have to go the extra step, though, because through this other program because of the consigners." She said social media has been a lifesaver during this time of having the shop closed to customers and moving to a website. "We're very lucky that we already had a strong presence," she said. "Right now, we've been letting people shop through there and message us when they want something. We take payment over the phone or through PayPal. Then we run it out to their cars if they want to pick it up, or we'll hold on to it if they don't want to pick it up anytime soon. The store is also extending their pickup deadline. We're just offering everyone flexibility to make sure everybody's operating at their comfort level," Covington said. "We are lucky now that we have so many people following us, so we can use that to actually give shout-outs to other local businesses who may not have as strong a following right now. I've seen this community, small business community, growing for the past few years, and it's very tight-knit," she said. "Everyone is really embracing community over competition. Everyone's sharing each other's stuff on social media." Covington said she has worked harder over the past 2 weeks than she has all year because there is so much to do in the shop while taking it online. "We do use the storefront to connect with the local community," she said. "That's a little harder when we're limited to digital." Susie's South 40 Connections. Susie's South 40 Confections has opened a drive-through window at the store at 2101 West Wadley Avenue. The building used to be a Schlotzky's, and the drive-through window was closed up when the candy store took over. Owner Susie Hitchcock Hall said her business's handyman took out the screws of the drive-through, and then it was posted on their social media. "Within 30 minutes, a customer arrived at the drive-through window," she said. "People are tickled to have access to the shop," Hitchcock Hall said. "They're still shopping for birthdays and everything else that's continuing during this time." During the coronavirus quarantine, she said she and her staff have been working on new recipes in the kitchen and planning the Christmas catalog. The store has Easter baskets filled with eggs, fresh apples, fresh candies, and cookies. "People still want little pleasures and treats to get them through this time," Hitchcock Hall said. The Botanical Boutique. The Botanical Boutique has been providing curbside pickup and free delivery. The store has limited people to about three at a time and is making sure they follow social distancing. Alisa McMurray opened the Botanical Boutique at 200 Spring Park Drive in 2017. She formerly owned Manning's Garden Center, but closed that business and left Midland after her husband died. "I hope I'm bringing people joy with flowers," McMurray said. She said Midlanders who have been here know her, but it was difficult coming back to reach new customers with the Botanical Boutique. Social media has helped in this effort, and McMurray has been getting questions through phone calls, Facebook, or Instagram messages about where to plant and how much to water. "They're sending me pictures, I'm sending them pictures," she said. "It can be very time-consuming. Botanical Boutique has reduced hours, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. McMurray said there is an outdoor space with bedding plants, and customers are provided with gloves and boxes while they shop. The Botanical Boutique received another shipment of landscaping plants this week. "We need pretty things to look at because we live in the desert," McMurray said. Perch. Perch is a furniture, decor, and gift store at 2040 Cuthbert Avenue, the former location of Stadium Sports. Owner Jamie Cole opened the business in September. "We have really amped up our social media postings so people are aware of the items that we have," Cole said. "We are doing call-ins to purchase, messaging, and curbside pickups." Perch is now doing wedding registries, which were going to be added eventually, she said. "At this time, any bride who needs to do registries, they can do a private appointment," she said. She said most of Perch's online traffic has been through Instagram, which can be difficult when notifications don't come through. "We are trying to stay on top of it, Instagram," she said. "We have a spare phone in the store, so any employee in the store now can have access and answer questions." Cole said more people are reaching out through social media. "The first week we started that, curbside pickup, I would say 90% of the people making purchases had never been in the store before. They followed us online, but they hadn't come in the store to purchase," she said. "Now that we can send them a payment request and they could pick it up curbside, it has brought in more people." Perch has items that can be helpful and fun during quarantine, Cole said. The store carries freezer cups for takeaway drinks, candles, paint-by-numbers kits, gratitude jars with 365 pieces of paper to write on, wooden travel toys, pool inflatables, and games. "Just things to kind of keep you sane," she said. "If you're trapped in your house all the time, sometimes all you need to do is light a new candle. I'm going to be posting more about the different candles we have because it's something easy to do and freshen up the space." Cole said Perch is her first retail store and they are rolling with the punches. "Midland is amazing," she said. "When this kind of thing happens, they buckle down and want to support local businesses." This article is entitled, "Fluid Situation Leads to Longer School Closures," by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD and Midland Christian were among the entities that announced Tuesday their schools will be closed at least until May 1st. Greenwood, Cahoma, and Ector County ISD and Hillcrest School announced longer-term closures in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Campuses around the region have been closed since after spring break week in Midland, Odessa, which was March 9th to 13th. Governor Greg Abbott announced Tuesday that schools across Texas will remain closed until at least early May as part of an executive order that is to continue to stem the spread of the new coronavirus, according to a Texas Tribune article. A previous executive order from Abbott shuttered schools until midnight Friday, but his most recent order extends the shutdown until May 4th, the Tribune report stated. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said the situation has been a fluid one for district officials. District Chief of Staff Katie Atkins said Monday administrators wanted to be ready for all possibilities. Riddick said the goal has been to make sure MISD has communicated with other government entities in the community, has its people in place when a decision was made, and that the district had its information ready for the community. Riddick also said President Donald Trump's plan also helped formulate what it could look like for education officials. "This is a Permian Basin conversation," Riddick said. "So Ector County ISD superintendent and I have had these conversations as well to see could we make this happen in this time frame so that both staff members are ready to move forward with that. And that's part of the challenge of getting this information out." Riddick said that phase three of the district's post-spring break plan, delivering on a teacher-led classroom online, is still in the works. "The district is learning about resources families have in their homes and what is needed, even if that requires Wi-Fi-equipped buses parked at strategically located places to provide access to students. Assessments are continuing, he said. We're working through a lot of factors that are challenging our team, Riddick said. I'm challenging them, the board is challenging them, and they're challenging themselves around delivering something that is as relevant as what you could get in a classroom that we could provide your home. Work also continues in determining class rankings at MISD's high schools. Grade point averages, a list of students with remaining deficits within courses that haven't been closed, and progression of students in other grade levels. The district will continue providing grab-and-go breakfasts, 7:30 to 8:30 a.m., and lunches, 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Monday through Friday, during the closure, according to a press release from the district. Academic materials will continue to be shared with students and families online and at the meal pickup sites. The district also stated it will host briefings through Facebook Live. As of Tuesday, broadcasts in English will take place at 4:30 p.m. on Mondays and Fridays, and broadcasts in Spanish will take place at 4:30 p.m. on Wednesdays, according to the district. Online, www.facebook.com/MidlandISD or www.midlandisd.net/COVID-19. This article is entitled City Officials Announce Three New Cases. Other Things to Know About the Coronavirus at End of March by Stuart Doreen. The number of coronavirus COVID-19 cases in Midland County rose to 16 after three new cases were announced Tuesday. The city reports that cases 14, 15, and 16 are a female in her 20s, a male in his 50s, and a male in his 30s, respectively. None have been admitted to the hospital. They are all quarantining at home. The source of exposure for the female was contact to a known case, and the source for the men were travel. The Midland Health website shows 355 samples taken at the hospital, 13 positive cases, 3 cases came from private physicians' offices, 219 negative tests, and 123 waiting for results. The Texas Department of State Health Services reported on its website Tuesday that there were 3,266 cases reported and 41 fatalities. One of those was the Midland man in his 60s. DSHS also shows 122 of 254 counties in Texas reporting cases. West Texas counties with confirmed coronavirus cases include Lubbock, 77, Taylor, Abilene, 11, Ector, Odessa, 10, Tom Green, San Angelo, 6, and Dawson, La Mesa, 3. Crane, Gaines, and Martin reported one each. The 16 in Midland County would tie it for the 26th most across the state, according to DSHS, whose statistics Tuesday were from 8 p.m. Monday. Hospital update. Russell Myers said Tuesday morning that the hospital census was 40% of capacity. Its emergency room visits hold to half its normal range, and there are 10 people at MMH deemed to be patients under investigation, those showing COVID symptoms but not having a confirmed test. Peak conditions? Myers said the hospital or community hasn't reached the peak for those with coronavirus, and that Midland Health officials are in contact with the University of Texas System researchers about when a peak is expected to take place. The more we distance, the more we stay at home, the farther out that peak happens, and the shallower the peak becomes, Myers said. That's really important because the worst-case models show far more need for hospital beds and critical care beds, as you've seen in New York, than any of us can put together. A wily virus. Dr. Larry Wilson, Midland Memorial Chief Medical Officer, said not only has the coronavirus created chaos, but is apparently wily. Wilson said the virus behaves in a way to protect itself from being discovered and to spread itself quickly before people recognize that it's even there. We see patients coming into our hospital that we're pretty confident have the virus that are presented with headaches or neurological symptoms, Wilson said. we had a patient that proved to have a positive test that had shown up in another facility a day before with a blackout spell. And a young person that would normally be worked up as a syncope episode should not be treated as though it's this virus. The following day, with respiratory tract symptoms and fever, the patient was tested and proved to have COVID. And so this is a very efficient virus, as I mentioned, and it hides itself very well. Wilson said it is very important that we behave in a reasoned, paranoid fashion as if everyone you know might have this virus. They may not be acting symptomatic, but they may be spreading it. They may be having different kinds of symptoms, but they may actually have COVID. So we have to continue this social distancing. We have to continue to be practicing hand hygiene and all the practices that you've heard of ad nauseum. Because this is fundamentally true that it's in our community and we may not be able to test for it and get it on the first testing. And that's out there. This article is entitled Midland ISD to Create Summer Learning Environment. Riddick said session will help prepare students for 2020-21 school year by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said Tuesday morning that the district will have a summer learning environment to help students prepare for the 2020-21 school year. Riddick said that the current academic year will end in May as scheduled, but the district will establish some type of learning environment this summer. He stops short of saying it would be a formal class or a mandatory class. What the learning environment day would look like, or how long the summer session would last. He expects ideas could formulate into something for learners that need to maintain the course, who are behind, or who have gaps. Midland ISD last had classes on campus before the district's spring break, which was March 9th to 13th. Riddick announced Tuesday that campuses will remain closed through at least May 1st. That means it could be nearly 2 months since students last had face-to-face interaction with teachers should they return to class on May 4th. The district has been providing enrichment material for its 26,000-plus students since last week. MISD officials have talked about creating a Google Classroom for students and their teachers. Riddick talked about the difficulties of reaching students whose homes don't have the internet and or equipment needed for an online educational experience. He said the district is doing its best with its resources to bring Wi-Fi to the masses. Midland ISD already was behind some of its own board-created academic performance goals, as reported by Midland ISD staff during board meetings before coronavirus impacted the 2019-20 school year. Education officials in the past have also worried about what it does for students to be out of the classroom for extended periods of time. One example of this is the so-called summer slide. Scholastic.com reports on its website that a study about summer slide indicates that kids lose significant knowledge in reading and math over summer break, which tends to have a snowball effect as they experience subsequent skill loss each year. A more recent study of children in 3rd to 5th grades also showed that students lost, on average, about 20% of their school year gains in reading and 27% of their school year gains in math during the summer break. We've done a summer learning program every year with summer school in some form or fashion, Riddick said. And we need to think through what summer learning will look like for students who need to come back into the environment and dive forward. I can't tell you what that is today, but I can tell you that we're going to have some form of a learning opportunity for families to dive into so their kids can be at their best as they walk into the 2020-21 school year. This article is entitled Abbott Orders Texas to Minimize Non-Essential Activity Outside Their Homes by Patrick Svitek, Texas Tribune. Governor Greg Abbott on Tuesday told Texans to stay at home for the next month when not taking part in essential services. issuing an executive order that says residents of the state must minimize social gatherings and in-person contact with people outside their homes. He also announced that schools would remain closed until at least May 4th. At a press conference at the Texas Capitol, Abbott purposely stopped short of calling the decree a stay-at-home order, saying he wanted Texans to know they could still leave their home to do things such as go to the grocery store or go for a jog. But he said in an interview soon after that, the mayor ordered such requirements from other states. When asked whether Tuesday's order brings Texas up to speed with states like New York that have issued shelter-in-place or stay-at-home orders, Abbott answered, "It's a fact. If you're not engaged in an essential service or activity, then you need to be at home for the purpose of slowing the spread of COVID-19, he said. The state has outlined a list of more than a dozen sectors that provide essential services that comply with Abbott's order, which is largely aligned with federal guidance on the issue. Those include health care, energy, food, and critical manufacturing. Texas's list adds religious services, which are not included in federal guidelines. The language of the order and Abbott's reluctance to call it a stay-at-home order caused some confusion about its scope and what specifically it restricts. But Abbott spokesman John Whitman said after the governor's news conference that the only thing that is allowed are essential services and personal activity which correspond with those services. That is in addition to the personal and religious activities that the executive order explicitly allows. Later, State Representative Chris Turner, chair of the House Democratic Caucus, said Governor Abbott has essentially created a statewide stay-at-home order. His press conference was confusing at times today, but we believe it amounts to a step in the right direction. The order, which goes into effect at 12:01 a.m. Thursday, expands on one Abbott issued earlier this month that did four things: limit social gatherings to 10 people, close bars, restaurants, and gyms, while still allowing takeout, ban people from nursing homes except for critical care, and temporarily close schools. That order is set to expire at midnight Friday. Abbott's latest order goes through April 30th, aligning it with the new end date that President Donald Trump announced Monday for social distancing guidelines. "We've come too far to falter now," Abbott said at a news conference, where he was joined by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and State House Speaker Dennis Bonin. "We have made tremendous strides, but we have not yet reached our destination. Together, we will persevere through this for another month."
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for April 1st, a Wednesday. Odessa boy shares his hope. This story was written by Tony Venegas. What started off as a simple class art project turned into something a little bigger for Isaac Rodriguez. The 9-year-old student at Austin Montessori School and his mother, Maggie, took to the driveway Monday afternoon in front of their home and got going with plenty of chalk in hand. A little more than 2 hours later, the work was done on a sizable section of the driveway with the simple message, "We are in this together," to bring a little bit of joy into what has been a challenging time due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Quote, "He wanted to do something to reflect what was going on in the world right now," Maggie Rodriguez said. "Once we decided what we wanted to write on there, that's when we pulled out the chalk," end quote. The assignment was initially given by his teacher, Valerie Grant, as part of a way to let the kids express their creative side. It was also a way to get out of the house, since all schools in the Ector County Independent School District remained closed until at least May. Quote, "She wanted to let the kids be creative," said Maggie, of the original assignment. She, that is Grant, told them that, "I don't want you all to stress out over this assignment. just let the kids have fun because they understand what was going on, end quote. Rodriguez added they took almost two full boxes of chalk to complete the piece with a wide range of colors. Amazingly, she said, there is still some chalk left over, but as she puts it, quote, they're all broken into pieces, end quote. When that project was shared with the rest of the class, Isaac said that everyone in his class was impressed, and even his teacher was taken aback as well. Quote, a lot of people were saying on Facebook that it was good work, he said. Maggie said that Isaac has always been artistic and creative, but neither one anticipated just how much attention that this piece had received over the last few hours. It has grown thanks to a wider nationwide movement where kids and adults are using chalk art to express themselves and stay socially connected in some way. Maggie added that Isaac wants the art to help share the message to people to take care of themselves during this time. Quote, he says he wants people to be safe and stay home, she said. Isaac added that he understands why he can't go back to school, and it's sad not being able to do so. Being able to communicate with his teacher and classmates through Zoom has proven to be a big help for him. As for the current artwork, the goal is to make it last as long as possible. Quote, we're going to leave it here as long as we can, Maggie said. It might rain this weekend, so we'll see, but I have the pictures of it to make some great memories. I'm very proud of him, end quote. Longtime Odessa lawman says farewell. Commander retires from DA's office. The story was written by Royal McGregor. Joe Commander reminisced about his law enforcement career, which spanned 37 years and 5 decades. Commander served his final day as the chief investigator for the Ector County District Attorney's Office, a position he has held for the last 13 years, on Tuesday. The decision to retire was set in stone about a year ago, and Commander knows his final day at the Ector County Courthouse is going to be bittersweet. It's going to be a sad day for me, but on the other hand, it's going to be a happy day, Commander said. Throughout his law enforcement career, Commander worked for the Ector County Sheriff's Office, Lubbock County Sheriff's Office, Odessa Police Department, Ector County Drug Task Force, and the Ector County District Attorney's Office. Commander explained during a phone interview on Monday morning that a successful law enforcement career in his mind would involve him never having to use his firearm. It held true from his first day to final day. Though he never shot his firearm in the line of duty, his firearm was used, as Commander detailed, an incident that happened about 3 months into his law enforcement career. In a previous Odessa American article from December 8, 1972, detailed that Commander and his partner, Richard Pate, arrested and charged Lillian Virginia Reed with 2 counts of assault with intent to murder after she pulled Commander's six-shooter from its holster and fired at the two ECSO deputies. Pate and Commander were not injured during the incident. Commander said he remembers wondering if he made the right decision to be in law enforcement. Quote, I had to do some soul searching, Commander said. I had just gotten married, and I said, what have I got myself into? I ended up going in the next day and went back to work, end quote. Commander explained in the 70s, there wasn't therapy sessions for traumatic events. He said deputies had to cowboy up. Commander returned to work, then went to work for the Lubbock County Sheriff's Office in 1973, and eventually returned to the Permian. He said, quote, I want to play golf a couple of days a week, and then have a couple of days where the wife and I can run around New Mexico or whatever, We wanted to go have some fun for ourselves for a change, Commander said. Hector County District Attorney Bobby Bland said Commander will be missed as the lead investigator. Bland said a replacement has not been named for Commander's position. Quote, selfishly, I hate to see him go, Bland said. He told me a long time ago that this was going to happen, so we've been preparing for it. I want him to be happy. End quote. Odessa's new normal. ECHD details 10 positives. The story was written by Michael Merlo. Hector County Health Department Director Brandy Garcia detailed during a press conference on Tuesday afternoon that the county has 10 total positive cases, 60 pending, and 29 negatives. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin held a press conference at the Hetzler Building on the MCH campus. The press conference included Odessa Regional Medical Center and MCH officials, along with the Hector County Health Department and Hector County Judge Debbie Hayes. Tippin said MCH has completed 60 tests and 3 tests came back positive. Tippin said that he projected one of those who tested positive would be sent home. They have 12 negatives and 8 pending, and the number of pending approvals is 21, which are samples the state has yet to approve to be sent to test labs. Quote, if we get a lot of tests hung up at the state level, Tippin said, then we'll probably move on to an outside lab to help advance that on. End quote. Tippin said that MCH had negative pressure rooms ready as well as ventilators and PPE. He said that, as a whole, there are 175 people in MCH and 32 ventilators not in use. He added that they are focused on the mental health and physical health of MCH employees so that they can continue to provide good work for patients. ORMC President Stacy Brown gave an update saying they have tested a total of 37 patients and have 5 that have been positive and 7 negative, with 25 pending results. They have 2 under investigation, 2 confirmed in the ICU on ventilators, and 1 was discharged. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said that the virus is spread from droplets through the air, from person to person, as well as from surfaces. He said that the best protection from the virus is to maintain distance, stay at home as much as possible, and to wear a mask if sick to not spread it to other people, as well as washing homes. Saravanan said that if anyone thinks they might have COVID-19, or knows they have it, they should, quote, stay at home, isolate yourself from the rest of your family if you can in a room in your house, to only go out if you absolutely need to, and to monitor yourself for the symptoms that could warrant you seeking more medical care, end quote. He said that those treating themselves at home should treat themselves with over-the-counter medication for fevers and coughs. MCH General Surgeon Dr. Donald Davenport addressed ongoing studies that are, quote, discussing the use of ibuprofen-based products that don't do well with COVID-19, and so probably refraining from that type of medication, he said. He added that people need to be very cautious about medications they are taking by checking labels and making sure there is no ibuprofen substance that helps make up the medication. Hayes announced the Emergency Operations Center has relocated to the Southside Senior Center, located at 900 South Dixie Boulevard. Saravanan said that tests are done whether or not patients are priority. Priority 1 is symptomatic patients who are hospitalized and symptomatic patients who are hospital workers. Priority 2 is symptomatic patients who have other risk factors, so either the elderly or other conditions that could make them sicker than normal. The third priority is other essential care workers that are symptomatic. Quote, different labs are getting us test results back in different time frames, he said. The first specimen, in fact, which is still pending today, I think is day 12 now, that's sitting somewhere in California at a lab core lab waiting to be tested, end quote. Adding that he thought the long wait was because of the high volume they had. Sarah Vannon also said that since the virus has progressed, other labs have opened up to get test results back in a shorter period of time. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that a lot of the state labs are open until 1 p.m. on Saturdays, and that most tests sent back in the week come back on Mondays. Following Mayor David Turner's shelter-in-place order and the Ector County Judge's declaration of local disaster, some businesses will be finding new ways to operate, while others will temporarily shut down. On Monday, the Ector County Public Library announced via Facebook that they would close due to Turner's shelter-in-place order and that, quote, fines will not accumulate. They asked cardholders to please keep the materials at home and be safe. Ector County Independent School District announced that they have extended their cancellation until May 1st, but the governor has ordered school closed to May 4th. Senior centers are closed down, but they are handing out lunches from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday at their North Side Senior Center. Hayes said that they also deliver meals to those who cannot get there. Turner took to Facebook to say the county is doing a great job with keeping man camps clean and that there is still no curfew. Game rooms are closed, he said. He added that the Music City Mall will be closed, but places like restaurants, household stores, and any medical facilities or nutritional stores within the mall could stay open. Mobile car washes are also okay, he said. The city posted that animal grooming businesses, such as pet bathing, hair grooming, nail clipping, etc., cannot stay open. Turner said he is working with grocery stores to limit customers allowed inside, as well as asking them to clean carts. Quote, the most dangerous places in Odessa are when you are in line, he said. He added that some stores are asking customers to maintain the 6-foot distance while others have remained packed. He once again said that the citizens do not require work permits, but police will ask where drivers are going if pulled over. He also said that essential employees do not need an essential employee form. Turner said that the shelter-in-place applies to the city and that the Ector County Declaration is very similar, considering essential and non-essential employees. Quote, if you hear it from me, you're going to hear the same thing from Judge Hayes, Turner said. He said to call the police if anyone sees citizens in groups of 10 or more and they are not practicing social distancing. Quote, it's up to $1,000 fine and up to 180 days in jail, Turner said. That's not in there to penalize. It's put in there to make people understand how important this is, end quote. Turner said that if people have questions, they can send them through his Facebook Messenger and he will try to address them. As far as what the county is doing, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said Hayes sent out an email yesterday asking officials to work on which functions are essential, and they are currently in that process. Annabella Schwartz, a staff nurse at an isolation unit at MCH, gave information on the personal protective equipment nurses wear in the isolation unit. They put on masks and gowns that are waterproof and protect the front of their body and the upper back. They wear double gloves for when they open doors and go from room to room. Nurses wear N95 masks for those COVID-19 patients or suspected patients, and they apply a cloth mask over the N95 mask. Nurses also wear shoe covers. Schwartz said that, quote, "I feel secure working on 7 Central," she said, "because at least I have the equipment that I need in order to protect myself and the public, and I can leave and go home and feel that I'm not bringing this home with me," end quote. She added that nurses wear goggles and she wears them over her glasses. She wipes them down after each use. She said that nurses change into scrubs when getting to work, and after work they will change, and that the scrubs and equipment is disposed after each use. She also said that nurses have the option to shower at work before they leave work. Larissa Guevara, who works as an ICU nurse, said that they are a non-COVID moment at this time, so they are mostly using cloth masks and surgical at this time. She said that they wash the cloth masks daily as recommended by the CDC. She added that surgical masks mostly protect other people and prevents the wearer from spreading their own droplets, while the N95 mask is what protects more for droplet precautions and airborne to prevent from breathing in. Guevara said that wearing a cloth or surgical mask in public could help keep the wearer from spreading any virus they carry and could help prevent them from some exposure from others, but that a lot of people wearing gloves are touching things at stores and taking their gloves home, which just brings those germs home. She said that instead, it is more important to wash hands after each activity done. This is an Odessa American Quick Hit. New signals to go live. The signals at East Loop 338 and 52nd 56th Street will go live today. Motorists are being asked to avoid the area, and TxDOT details that the signal should be up and operational by the end of the day. Get some fresh air. It's still okay to step outside to get a breath of fresh air or to take a walk, run, or bike ride. Be sure to keep at least 6 feet from others and wash your hands as soon as you return home. Parks are closed, but walking trails are not. Social distancing remains important. Need help? Visit tinyurl.com/SV4A02R for a listing of websites offering government information and also other helpful links for getting through this crisis. Atmos gives $30,000 to West Texas Food Bank. The escalating public health crisis is responsible for an unprecedented number of school closures, layoffs, and economic disruptions across the country, and millions of students who depend on school food programs for their next meal also have parents whose jobs are at risk or have been eliminated due to the pandemic. The Atmos Energy Robert W. Best Charitable Giving Fund announced on Tuesday a $30,000 donation to quickly stock the shelves at the West Texas Food Bank in Odessa and Midland, where students and families affected by the coronavirus outbreak can access a steady supply of nutritious meals during these uncertain times. Quote, "As the federal guidelines to maintain social distancing were extended through April 30th, unemployment will likely continue to rise and children may not have access to school meals in the foreseeable future," said Andrea Goodson, Atmos Energy Manager of Public Affairs. Continuing the quote, "Atmos Energy is committed to helping our communities, and we made this donation to support families who need assistance in finding their next meal," end quote. Recent data indicates that 37 million U.S. citizens face hunger, a number that is sure to climb as the nation tackles a public health crisis in which spiking unemployment and lost wages will play an outsized role. For more than 50 years, food banks have combated hunger by acting as food storage and distribution depots for frontline agencies that interact directly with those in need. Quote, "We are so grateful to all who have stepped up during this increased time of need," said Libby Campbell, executive director of the West Texas Food Bank. Quote, "This gift from Atmos Energy will provide life-sustaining, nutritious meals to those who need it the most. I am grateful for their support," end quote. The Atmos Energy Robert W. West Charitable Giving Fund makes contributions that advance its focus on three pillars of outreach: health, education, and community welfare. Visit www.atmosenergy.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. Humane Society of Odessa Sees Increase in Adoptions, by Royal McGregor. The Humane Society of Odessa has experienced high levels of traffic come through its doors over the last 2 weeks. Additionally, the increased number of people has also resulted in more adoptions. Heather Sylvia, the director of the Humane Society of Odessa, said the no-kill shelter has averaged 3 adoptions per day for the past 2 weeks. She explained there are other times when the Humane Society of Odessa will go days without an adoption. "We've had a lot of lookers too," she said. "We have people who are coming to look and they leave with an animal. They didn't intend to adopt, but they saw something they couldn't live without, so they ended up taking them home." As of Friday afternoon, Sylvia estimated there were 120 dogs and 35 cats. The Humane Society of Odessa also transported 20 dogs to other no-kill shelters Friday morning. She said the number of animals at the shelter has been much higher in the past, but she feels 120 dogs and 35 cats is comfortable for her, her staff, and volunteers. The increase in foot traffic and adoption rate could be linked to people staying at home due to the coronavirus. Christina Taylor, the business office manager at the Humane Society of Odessa, explained there are multiple families that have come into the shelter over the last week looking for a puppy to train. "Since Monday, I had 3 different families come in here with their kids who are in high school who literally said, 'We thought about adopting before, but we were thinking maybe an older dog that is already house trained because we don't have the time,'" Taylor said. "Now that they are home all the time, it's the perfect time." Sylvia said she has been surprised with the number of people who have come to the shelter. The Humane Society of Odessa director thought people would be too hesitant to leave their house. "I'm surprised because of the scare that everybody has. I figured they would be scared to come out here, but we've limited the amount of people in and out of the gate at one time, in and out of the office at one time. That's really helped to put everybody's mind at ease as far as the employees, customers, and volunteers." Another reason for the Humane Society of Odessa's increase is due to Odessa Animal Control being closed. Odessa Police Department spokesperson Corporal Steve Lesser said over the phone Thursday afternoon that OAC isn't allowing intakes or adoptions. Lesser said dogs and cats are also not being euthanized during this time. He said the only intake OAC will do is if their owner is arrested and the dog needs to be sheltered. Everything else is being postponed until further notice. Though the coronavirus has brought more people into the doors of the Humane Society of Odessa, one obstacle Sylvia has had to overcome is the availability of cleaning supplies and dog food. She said the shelter is also accepting donations of cleaning supplies, dog food, and cat food. "We get large dog and cat food shipments from HEB every 3 to 4 months," she said. "We had one scheduled to be coming in 2 weeks, and they informed us that they have no food to give us in 2 weeks. We are going to be in a bind in 2 weeks if something doesn't happen. Local news roundup. Autopsy rules death as homicide for man found near gas station alley. An autopsy for the 56-year-old man who was found dead in an alley behind a gas station in central Odessa has been ruled a homicide. The reported death happened around 8:20 p.m. March 23rd in the alley behind the DK, located in the 1000 block of North Dixie, an Odessa Police Department press release detailed. Officers reportedly saw a deceased man, later identified as Samuel Dean Jones, 56, of Odessa. The Criminal Investigation Division, Crime Scene Unit, and Ector County Medical Examiner's Office all responded to the scene, the press release stated. Jones was sent to Tarrant County for an autopsy, which later determined it was a homicide. A photo of Jones has been released at tinyurl.com/WEYSQ9G. As of Tuesday morning, no arrests have been made and the investigation continues. Anyone with information about this incident is asked to contact the Odessa Police Department or Odessa Crime Stoppers and reference case number 20-06110. Teenager charged with assault, possession of multiple narcotics, and public intoxication. A teenager was arrested after he reportedly pointed a handgun at two people, was in possession of cocaine, ecstasy, marijuana, and was intoxicated. Noah Talamantes, 18, was charged with delivery of cocaine, a first-degree felony, two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, possession of a controlled substance, a second-degree felony, possession of marijuana, a state jail felony, evading arrest or detention, a Class A misdemeanor, unlawfully carrying a weapon, a Class A misdemeanor, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported assault happened at 11:49 p.m. Saturday at the MCM Fun Dome, 6201 East Highway 80, an OPD affidavit detailed. An Ector County ISD officer was reportedly at the scene when OPD arrived, and the ECISD officer stated there was a firearm in the front seat of a silver Chevrolet Silverado. The OPD officer also stated there was a strong odor of marijuana coming from the pickup. A security guard at the Fun Dome stated the suspect, later identified as Talamantes, was in room 236, the affidavit stated. Officers saw Talamantes look out the window of room 236 and the door to the room opened and he ran out of the room. Officers reportedly asked him to stop running, but he refused. An OPD officer was in his full uniform when Talamantes looked out the window before he started running. A victim, identified as Mark Ramos, stated he saw Talamantes driving in the pickup recklessly in the parking lot. Ramos reportedly asked Talamantes to stop, and he confronted Talamantes about driving recklessly through the parking lot, the affidavit detailed. Talamantes reportedly pulled out a silver and black handgun, cocked it, and pointed it at Ramos. Ramos stated that Talamantes drove off, and he approached Talamantes again, and Ramos stated that Talamantes pointed the gun at him again and stated, "I love this S blank," and would not put the gun away. Another victim, identified as Chad Fisher, stated he saw the pickup flying through the parking lot multiple times with no regard for people or children, the affidavit stated. Fisher stated Talamantes drove off and almost hit him. Fisher stated he started yelling at Talamantes when a Hispanic female got out of the truck and started yelling at him. Fisher reportedly told officers that's when Talamantes started to approach him. Fisher stated that he got into an argument with Talamantes. He also stated Talamantes pulled a chrome pistol out of his pants, cocked it, and pointed it at his face. Officers reportedly could smell a strong odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from Talamantes' breath and person. He also had slurred speech, unsteady balance, and red, glassy, bloodshot eyes. Talamantes admitted to drinking. The OPD reportedly applied for a search warrant after seeing the handgun in plain view, which was granted. They located a black backpack in the front passenger floorboard, which had two large clear Ziploc baggies of marijuana, totaling 8.08 ounces, two small clear Ziploc baggies with multiple colored pills with imprints on each pill, which was deemed to be ecstasy, totaling 12.2 grams. Officers also found a small white powdery substance behind the front right passenger seat, which was deemed to be cocaine, totaling 19.1 grams. Officers also found two scales near the cocaine with a white powdery substance on them, the affidavit stated. The cocaine wasn't a personal amount due to the large amount. Talamantes was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has seven bonds totaling $245,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon, jail records show.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.